This is Lightning Power Lunch with Dave Mishkin and Greg Linnelli on Lightning Radio.
That's right. We are here again for you, as we'll be here 1 hour every day, every weekday, talking Lightning hockey and the NHL. I am Greg Linnelli, along with the radio voice of the Lightning, Dave Mishkin. Steve Ersnick is our producer. Special guest coming up in about 20 minutes or so. That would be Brian Engblom, a Lightning broadcaster slash analyst, former NHL defenseman. He's done a lot in his career, and I would say, partner, one of the better guests throughout hockey. You know, when we talk about what's going on with the team and maybe what to look for specifically, it's always nice to catch up with Brian, because I feel like every time I have him on, I learn something new, which is, I think, hard to do with so much information out there that's regurgitated. But I think Brian is one of the best in the business from that standpoint, amongst others. And I tell you what, the back end, we spent a decent portion of yesterday's show talking about Myers and Sergachev and the losses of McDonough and Root. So I'll be curious to hear from Brian what the Lightning's back end potentially will look like moving forward and what are the expectations, but none better.
Yep, I've had a chance to have a few conversations with Brian so far during training camp in the days before the hurricane. Like, the Lightning had some practices in Brandon at the very beginning of training camp, and Brian and I watched a lot of the sessions together. So he's definitely ready and raring to go and clued in to everything that's going on. So it'll be good to get him on the air today. First of many this season.
First of many, no doubt, as we inch a little closer to the regular season, a couple of more preseason games that the Lightning have to deal with coming up here on Thursday and Saturday against the Panthers. And, you know, partner, we had speculated yesterday what the Lightning were going to do with a couple of players that they put on waivers. And we got a little bit of an answer yesterday. They trimmed their training camp roster by three, and that was Alex Barré-Boulet and Jamel Smith and defenseman Sean Day, all assigned to Syracuse. The Lightning now have 26 players remaining in training camp. So, did we answer any of our questions from those moves yesterday, or is it still, you know, more of a question mark with how this roster is going to shape up moving forward here?
Well, I think a lot of questions got answered. I think we asked, you know, did Fortier basically put himself in a position to make the team, or were these waiver wire moves involving Smith and Barré-Boulet? Day had been put through waivers, I think, a day earlier, maybe a couple of days earlier. But were the moves relating to Smith and Barré-Boulet kind of roster flexibility moves, essentially, for the Lightning, where they weren't going to go down, but it gave the Lightning an opportunity to maybe send them down later? And the answer to the question was the first one. Fortier is basically poised to make the team. I'm going to ask Brian this. I cannot remember ever, with a capital E, heading into the second week of preseason, the second week of these games where you've pared down your roster to basically be at opening night roster levels. Because you said 26, Greg, and technically that's correct. But that number includes Bogosian and Cirelli,
correct,
who were injured. So now you're at 24. And PC Labrie is still on the roster. That, I think, has – I'm not sure exactly what's going on there. He would have to clear waivers. I think presumably, you know, he's going to be heading to Syracuse at some point. He hasn't actually played – certainly hasn't played in either of the last two preseason games. I didn't do the Carolina game, so I confess I don't remember if he was in that game or not. But he is not in the run. He hasn't even been practicing. So take him off. That gets you to 23. Now the question is, are they going to go with 23? Are they going to go with 22? You figure they're not keeping eight defensemen. So I guess there is a question, is it going to be Perbix? Is it going to be Fleury? I think we spelled that out yesterday. That one I'm not changing my opinion on. I think this is a great opportunity for Perbix, but he's waiver exempt and they want him to play. He's a first year pro player. So I would not be surprised if we see him being the guy that is sent down and they start the season with 22. Because that's basically where we're at. You got one extra forward and one extra defenseman heading into these final two preseason games. And that's what I cannot remember ever seeing. Ever. I mean, usually 4 to 5 extra guys, but 2? That's extremely rare. But to your point, what questions do we get answered? Smith and Barry Boulay are in Syracuse. Sean Day was heading to Syracuse. Now he is in Syracuse. That means you have 13 forwards, essentially. And Gabriel Fortier is the 13th forward. They could start the season with 12 forwards, theoretically. If they wanted to send Fortier down, they could. He's waiver exempt. But good for him. I mean, he got into a handful of games last year, scored his first NHL goal right before Christmas. Lightning were in Vegas. We remember that was that shortened trip where they were supposed to play 3 games and they ended up playing 1 because of the outbreak of the COVID variant. John Cooper actually caught COVID on that trip to Vegas, wasn't behind the bench, but Fortier scored his first NHL goal in that game.
Did he have a hat trick in the preseason too?
Yeah, that was last year's preseason.
For last year's preseason, right.
Right. So, look, good for him. Former second-round pick. I believe this is, his third pro season. He took strides. And I think that his game is well-suited for what we would call a bottom six, right?
Well,
and
I think
maybe that worked in his favor too, yeah. That he showed a lot. But he's not like a Barry Boulay, which you made that point yesterday, Greg. Like, Barry Boulay, in your mind, would have to be put in a certain situation where he can use his skill set. Fortier has skill, but, I mean, he's known for being kind of a speedy, kind of jack-of-all-trades, grinding type of player. That's where he's going to make his mark in the NHL.
And, you know, I think Jamel Smith has some of those qualities, but maybe, partner, it goes back to he missed just a lot of time last year, and maybe mm-hmm. this was an opportunity for him to go down there and play as many games as possible.
Yeah, maybe
and
so.
And I think that could be it, because I don't know who has more upside. You know, Smith is older, hasn't played in a ton of NHL games, more so than Fortier, but that's just because he's older and got to the league quicker. But there is a little bit of pedigree there with Fortier, and I think maybe this is a situation, too, where not only do they reward him making the big club, which we think is going to happen here coming out of camp, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see, too, partner, when you have a younger player like that, is he going to be given the opportunity to play in some games early on, or is this mm-hmm. going to be one of those situations where it's only a couple and he's basically practicing, waiting for a guy like Cirelli to come back and then be sent back down? Because it looks like Cirelli maybe is ahead of schedule. Don't know. You know, we'll see how quickly he can get back on the ice. I'm always curious. I think there's a couple of steps in this process for a young player like him. Can you make the team coming out of camp? And we think there's going to be a check mark in that box. And then number 2, are you playing or are you sitting? Because mm-hmm. for a younger player, you want to be in the lineup as much as possible, whether it's 10 minutes a night playing on the fourth line or whether it's 15 playing in a top 6 role. We don't know the answer to that question, partner, but we got an answer maybe to that first part. It looks like he's part of this team breaking camp. Now it becomes, okay, if you're going to bring a younger guy on like this, is he going to play or is he mainly going to sit? And I'm wondering, obviously the Lightning probably have discussed that internally. And maybe this is a situation where, again, having him appear with the big club for a month or so until Cirelli gets back is better in any capacity than just going down to Syracuse and playing, you know, 20 minutes a night.
But you know what, Greg? I think there is a difference between a guy like Fortier, who's in his third pro season, and even a guy who might be in his second pro season, and certainly a first-year pro, like Perbix, to use him as an example, even though he plays a different position. Fortier has played a fair amount in the American Hockey League. So he's earned the right to be in the NHL, and he may have to sit. I mean, we saw that with Boris Tkachuk at the beginning of last year. Now, Tkachuk was a year ahead of where Fortier is now in that he would have had to clear waivers. Remember that? Both he and Radish would have had to clear waivers had they sent either one of those guys down, and they didn't. But Tkachuk didn't get into games regularly right off the bat, and Fortier might be in the same boat. But I'm not certain that it's going to really hurt. When we say hurt his development, I mean, he's played a fair amount in the AHL, and maybe he's ready. Maybe he's ready for that next step. It won't hurt him to be in that role to sit and watch, which you made that point about Jamel Smith either yesterday or the day before, that he is a guy that would be able to handle that and it wouldn't really hurt his development because he has so much experience, certainly at the AHL level, but also in the NHL. And maybe now that he's in his third pro year, Fortier is kind of reaching the point where his game would potentially improve if he played 20, 22 minutes a night in Syracuse, but it's not going to hurt him to have to sit and watch at the same time practice every day with the NHL club. There is benefit to that to a young player as well.
Well, and let's face it too, this is a little bit of the Lightning's MO over the last few years. It feels like, and I think to be a successful team in the cap era, and it maybe doesn't even have to be in the cap era, your top six, for the most part, year in and year out, is going to be set. I mean, there could be some younger prospects, high draft picks that come in and force your hand to make a move. But I think when we look at the Lightning, when everybody's healthy, you have a pretty good indication, partner, who the top six will be. I think what separates the average teams from the good teams and then the good teams from the great teams are your depth pieces. And specifically, why that is, it's because you need to have, I think, competition on the third and fourth lines consistently every year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes, like we saw with the Yanni Gourde line a couple years back, you're not going to be able to hold on to those guys for an extended period of time because eventually they're going to get paid. And it's also because you're paying your high-level guys so much money, you constantly have to have an influx of new talent coming in or finding those bargain deals in free agency to fill out your third and fourth lines. It's one of the reasons why Tampa Bay has been so successful. It's one of the reasons why teams like Pittsburgh and Washington, who have been at the top for an extended period of time but have kind of declined a little bit, is because they haven't found that supporting cast to complement their star players like they did when those star players were in their prime. I think the Lightning have found that sweet spot. And I don't think, partner, it's a coincidence when you take a look at the last 4 or 5 years. Look at some of the younger players who have forced their hand and have made an impact on this team. You had guys like Braden Point, Anthony Cirelli, Ross Colton. I mean, if you want to go back to Yanni Gourde, that's fine as well. You've had guys like JT Brown to a lesser extent, but you even had guys like Vlad Nemestikov, who's back for his second tour. And I'm just talking about the forward position because that's the one where we can draw from. But I think there are opportunities there for younger players to come up and play on that third and fourth line, not only because they've earned it, partner, but because that's where the openings typically are now in today's parity-driven world that we live in when it comes to the NHL. The Lightning have found a nice rhythm in bringing it doesn't have to be 5 or 6. Those teams are rebuilding that do that. But 1 or 2 every year who can come in and challenge for a spot. Look at Tkachuk and Radish. They didn't stay with the team for all year, but the Lightning were able to turn those guys into trade bait and get some assets in return that allowed them to be even more competitive. So look at the Lightning the last 6 years or so and just take a look at some of the younger guys that have broken camp with them who are younger guys. And I think that constant competition, partner, on the third and fourth lines is vital in today's NHL if you want to continue to separate yourself from all the parity. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the Lightning have been one of the better teams, if not the best team, in doing that.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing Cole Koepke play because I
it's
mean
another guy.
I think
right?
I think we see that Fortier right now is slotted as the 13th forward, but Koepke is not. So Koepke is going to get a chance, at least at the start here, to play and to play regularly. And let's see how he does. Joe Smith had a pretty good article that I read this morning about. He must have gotten some of this information last year because it sounded like he visited Syracuse in February, but he wrote it as though like it was present day, looking back on Koepke in February of last year, but now Koepke is here. So he may have like had the information and kind of used some older material along with the newer material. But it was very enlightening to see how Koepke's game evolved last year. From a guy who had the tools but needed to kind of develop consistency and understand what it took to play at the level that he needed to play at game in, game out, and then what he needed to do to make the next step and get to the NHL. And it didn't happen for him overnight. It took him about half a season. But I think the Syracuse brass, Ben Grew, Stacey Roost, who's the GM, in Syracuse, assistant GM with the Lightning, like they were very encouraged with his progression last year. So it wasn't only that he did really well with the Black Aces and he was kind of the next guy up if the Lightning needed someone to slot in. It was the work that he did prior to that that I think made an impact. So let's see how he does now. He's getting dropped in the deep end of the pool at this point.
And listen, if you're a young player like this, I'm stating the obvious. I think you could probably say this for any profession. When you get an opportunity to showcase on the big stage, take advantage of it. You just don't know when you're going to get that opportunity. I mean, if you're Koepke, yes, you want to be responsible. You want to play with controlled aggression. I mean, I get the sense just from reading the scouting reports and talking to different people who have covered him. There is a sandpaper game that I think a lot of people are going to like that has allowed him to get to this level in addition to some of the other things that he's contributed at the AHL level. But I think also, too, you know, not being so wrapped up in the moment where you can't perform what you typically do very well. And I think he's got an opportunity here for the next X amount of weeks or months to make an impression. And if he does really well, you know, then the decisions will be, okay, well, what do we do with him?
Right.
I mean, not meaning trade him, obviously, but like, you know, keep the guy up here. He's performing really well. Let's find a spot in the rotation for him as opposed to, well, let's keep him on the roster and have him watch from the press box, which, you know, who knows what's going to happen from that standpoint. But what I'm saying is there's an opportunity there for him over the next, I'd say, few weeks, hopefully for him not to worry about coming out of the lineup and play the way that he's capable of playing. Because when are you going to get opportunities like this on this type of team partner who is competing for a Stanley Cup year in and year out?
You know, the dynamic might have looked a little different for Koepke had Cirelli not gotten hurt. I mean, we would go back and rewrite history. If Cirelli not gotten hurt, maybe the Lightning win the Stanley Cup. I mean,
sure.
I'm not speaking out of turn here. At the point that he got hurt, what was it, game four?
Yeah.
Lightning were down in the series 2-1, but they were winning game four. They were up in game four. And, you know, ended up losing game four. They won game five and then lost game six, but they had a hobbled Cirelli. Like, he was greatly affected by that, and then he had the surgery after that. Let's say Cirelli hadn't gotten hurt, and we're going to fast forward from the point that he did get hurt until now. Is Koepke the 13th forward? Maybe he is, but he is now only in his second pro season. And I do think there is a difference. I just talked about that. He does not have as much pro experience as a guy like Fortier. Maybe the Lightning would look at it and say, you know what, Cole, you're really close. You're knocking on the door. We want you here because you're going to get in. Or they say, you're really close. You're knocking on the door, but we want you to play. So we're going to send you to Syracuse. As it is, there is no Cirelli available at the start of this year. So Koepke is in this spot where he is knocking on the door, but the door has been opened because there is an open spot and it's his. to take AMP and he took it, would that look different if there hadn't been an open slot? You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But there is. So that's the way it goes. And he came into camp with an opportunity and he's made the most of it. He is at no point kind of fallen out of the mix. It's not like he has been dropped to basically the fifth line or the second or anything like that. He's played in every preseason game, and I would expect that he's going to get into these last two as well. So he is taking advantage of the opportunity, which is kind of what we talked about. When I said he's getting dropped in the deep end of the pool, the only reason he's getting dropped in the deep end of the pool is that the Lightning believe that he's going to do just fine in that deep end, right?
Yeah, he can swim.
They're very cautious about that, which is why they tend to err on the side of giving their young players time to kind of mature and develop and percolate, if you will, in the American Hockey League. They feel Koepke is ready.
And I also think, just from a fan's perspective, boy, it's always nice to see some new blood year in and year out. It just keeps things a little more interesting because, look, everybody's excited the Lightning are back and they want to see a healthy Kucherov and Braden Point and Steven Stamkos. Favorite Lightning play going with it. But I think it's more tribulation and a very boat. Younger players year in and year out, and you consistently have that pipeline. Matthew Joseph was another guy I forgot to mention, you know, who can come up through the system and contribute at a pretty high level. I think it's a tip of the cap to what you're doing as an organization, but also I think it just, you need that new blood year in and year out to just stay relevant. I mean, very rarely does a team back, they had the, that is, your team. We live in a world where you want to see instant results, and when things don't issues, but I just think to better don't go the way you want them to, changes are going to happen, whether it's at the coaching level or decision maker being left out of the equation. Maybe a general manager is let go, even if they've had a lot of success the previous couple of years. And I think the players, obviously, the player turnover is something that is pretty impactful year in and year out in any sport, but particularly one with the salary cap. And I think the Lightning have done a nice job of making things interesting for people to see. Oh, this is the guy that we've been hearing so much about the last 2 years. Oh, Perbix. Okay, I've heard a lot about him the last couple of years playing on the back end, and he actually is in the NHL this year. That would be great. And so every year the Lightning have one or two, maybe even three guys who are just knocking on the door ready to play. And I think in today's world, you need that. I think it's vital and it's essential. He is Dave Mishkin. I am Greg Linelli. Steve Versnick is producing. We are live here on the TuneIn app on Lightning Radio. This will be our home weekdays, noon to 1. And a guy we're going to have on throughout the season, hard to believe it's coming up, will be our good friend, Lightning broadcaster, analyst, former NHL defenseman, and Stanley Cup champ, Brian Engblom, with us right now. Brian, it's great to be with you. Hope you had a couple of good months off and got to decompress a little bit and stayed safe with the hurricane with all your loved ones as well.
Yeah, everything was good. Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, we were very fortunate. No injuries, no problems with our place. So we're very thankful for that and certainly have thoughts and prayers for people who ended up not being as lucky as we were here, and hope that they can continue to just kind of heal from it afterwards. Terrible thing to go through, and boy, just shows you, you know, it's a fine line how lucky you are as to whether it comes right over top of you or it goes by. So we count our blessings there, that's for sure.
Well, Brian, let's talk a little hockey. And one thing that I was looking forward to asking you, I cannot remember ever in the time that I've covered the Lightning in the NHL heading into the second week of the preseason with a roster number as low as the Lightning have it right now. Understanding you've got Cirelli and Bogosian injured, PC Labrie is technically on the roster, but he hasn't even been practicing with the team. You're really at 23 guys with two preseason games left. Can you remember ever seeing something like that, still with a couple of preseason games left? And what do you make of that, that they've gotten the number this low.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think they make up their mind very quickly, obviously, as to who they think even has a shot. So they're not pulling any punches. They want to get guys in shape. So there's only a couple of games left. So you're getting down to, you know, to the main players, right, who need a game or two to start getting their timing down and get ramped up and all that. Other players, you can interpret that different ways, and only the coaching staff will know, and I don't know if they'll say it outright, because in some instances they might think, well, let's take a, you know, a look at player X or whatever and go, yeah, he didn't show us anything. He's down. We're not messing around. So move him to Syracuse, and let's, you know, let's get this thing going. We know that there are a couple of spots open because of players that had to move on because of salary cap issues, and that happens every year. So we're interested to see who can fit financially as well as who is impressed enough to stay on the team. That's the real rub. And some players can get caught in that no man's land where, okay, you did pretty well, but geez, when we look at the overall number, we have to be at the salary cap. And if a guy makes, you know, 500 grand too much or whatever, you go, no, can't do it. You're on waivers, or they're looking to make a deal or whatever before their final roster cuts have to be made. So there's so much that goes into it now. It will be really interesting to see who does stick here at the end.
Brian Engblom joins us here on Lightning Radio. Brian, I felt like, and I expressed this opinion the last couple of shows, that the loss of Ryan McDonagh feels like it's going to be one that is going to just be harder to replace compared to some of the other players that have left via free agency or through trades. And while I think the Lightning obviously have enough guys to be good defensively, do you get the sense, because of his loss, because of Palat's loss, and even going a couple years back, Yanni Gord's line being gone, how good those guys were defensively, collectively, that because of all of those losses now, can this team, do you think, be as good defensively? And do you think to maybe overcome any defensive shortcomings they may have because of those losses, will they have to be maybe a bit better offensively this year?
I don't know that they'll change a lot offensively. Let's start with that. They have, you know, enough firepower. Cooch, Point, Stammer, Killorn scores. You've got guys that next level. Like, how good is Paul going to be this year? I was really impressed with him right from day one, right through the playoffs. I thought he did a tremendous job. I kind of heard through the grapevine some people from Ottawa went, really? Nick Paul? They signed him for over $3 million for, what was it, five-year deal? Or yeah, I think it was a five-year deal. I can't remember that term. And they went, really? So, yeah, he was terrific. Absolutely. I don't know if you're watching the playoffs, but he was terrific. So how good is he going to be? Ross Colton had a heck of a year. He's a really good player. So especially with Cirelli out of the lineup, there's room, more room possibly, you know, second line minutes. We know who the first line is, right? Whatever the combination is going to be. Point, Kucherov, Stammer, whoever. Does Stammer move to a second line? Yes, we'll see that. But you know what I mean? I think Ross Colton, is he going to get even 5-on-5 more offensive opportunities? I'm a big fan of his. I think Ross Colton's terrific, and he could take another step. Meaning, I'm not saying he's going to explode for another, you know, 10 goals more than he got last year. But can he be 20, 25 goal scorer? Yes, I do think so, depending on how much power play time he gets, and I think he will get some. We've seen him there in the past on the second power play. Nick Paul's the same thing. Can Nick Paul be a consistent 20-goal scorer? What's his role going to be, and how's it going to go until Cirelli comes back? Because there are some similarities for me between Paul and Cirelli. And we know what Cirelli can do and the type of player that he is, but is he going to be back mid-November or is he going to be back in early December? You know, there is a gap there. At the same time, to start the season, what You know, is Paul going to be matchup guy more? Is that going to take away from a little offense? Okay, you know, so those numbers at the end of the year will change. But it's dangerous to keep going back. I understand where you're going, Greg, but it's dangerous to keep going back and referring to even last year, never mind 2 years ago. It's a necessity that for the team and the coaching staff, like they reset the table and go, forget it. Don't play like we did last year. If you keep looking back, you're not looking forward and you're not dealing with what's in front of you. And what's in front of you now are several teams that got significantly better, even just within the division. So that's the attitude you have to have. And the coaches always say, and rightfully so, the players will sort this out. Whoever wants it, whoever gets off to a good start, gets fed a little more. Who are the you know, the American League guys? I mean, is a Cole Koepke, is he playing well enough to stick right to the end? And where is he going to fit? Are they going to sneak him in on the fourth line for some more speed? Are they going to remix the third line? I mean, there are a lot of questions for sure and a lot of things to resort out up front. As far as on the back end, for sure, McDonough is a huge loss. Just in the room alone, literally the way he walks in and out of the room. People underestimate that, and they can't see it from a distance. But you guys, like I am, are around the team all the time, and you know what kind of stature he had on the team, even before he put a skate on the ice. That's an important thing. You can, you know, call it leadership, call it whatever you want. It's all those things. But also, you know, the matchup that he did all the time and playing against top players and, of course, the penalty killing. But don't underestimate how many times he just made terrific plays to get the puck out of the zone on one nice pass up to the forwards and things that get overlooked but are important, you know, in a game, especially tight games. And there are a lot of tight games in today's NHL. So who is it going to be? You know, how are the new guys going to look? Is Hayden Fleury, is he going to take a step forward that people have been waiting for years? We don't know. Perbix, you know, is still around. They obviously like what he's done in camp. And Philippe Myers. Myers, I remember him more from Philadelphia, less certainly from Nashville last year, and he obviously had his issues. You look at the guy and you go, wow, he's got size, really skates well, good hands, passes, all those things. Clinically, he looks great. Now, there's got to be a reason why he hasn't been playing many games over the last couple of years. How quickly can he change? How quickly can he get comfortable? And can he be that guy? They're going to give him an opportunity or they wouldn't have signed him. So some really key questions and big answers that have to be answered fairly early on.
Brian, what do you make of Perbix entering his first full pro season, yet here he is still in camp?
Somebody likes him. That's the best thing I can say, because you're looking at a lot of bodies and a lot of guys, and for whatever reason, he is standing out to Coop and the coaching staff. Can I tell you exactly what that thing is? No, I can't really. But they like the way he moves. They like what he is, what he's reading. And that's a very important thing. You're playing defense in the NHL. That's the most difficult thing is, what do I need? I tell you guys this all the time. What do I need to do in order to get this job done? Don't look at Victor Hedman. Victor is different. You know, he's a star player. So I don't play like Victor Hedman. How do I play? Nick Perbix isn't exactly sure. He knows what he's good at, but he's still measuring himself. And that process is still going on because you're not even getting, you know, full lineups on other teams yet. And he hasn't been burned badly by, you know, one of the speedster star players on another team, a Johnny Gaudreau who's coming up soon. Yeah, good luck with that. You know, he's going to be feeling it. You go through that and go, oh, here he comes, you know, and how do I get that done? So there's a lot of tension on defense that people underestimate. It's the most difficult in many ways, I think, of all the positions. I might maybe a bit biased, but I really truly have believed that. Forwards can kind of get lost a little bit more, but you make mistakes on defense and you don't read and you get caught without enough speed, especially in today's game, and you get your doors blown off and everybody in the building sees it. And those things are tough to overcome. But they like what they see. They obviously talk to coaches that he's had up to this point. They do their homework, meaning Coop and the staff, and we'll see how far it goes.
Brian Engblom joins us here on Lightning Radio. Brian, what do you make of the final two preseason games against the Florida Panthers? As somebody who played, they are exhibition games, but is it a little more than that because it's the Panthers and even some of the changes that they've made maybe ups the ante a bit?
I think it's just merely an interest factor. I mean, they'll be playing most of their team, I'm sure, as well, just like the Lightning is, for the same reasons. They've got new faces. They made the big trade. They pulled their team apart in some ways, surprisingly to me in some ways. How is that going to integrate? How are these new players going to integrate themselves? And so they need time. They need to play together. They need to figure out, where do they fit? So they're going through that process just like the Lightning are, just like every team in the league. So you're utilizing those last two games to mix and match a little bit, try guys on different lines. And sometimes you can almost tell right off the bat, like, this is not working. These guys just don't fit. Maybe on paper, we thought so-and-so would play with so-and-so. Maybe Tkachuk is going to play, with Barkov. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's not. But Tkachuk is, the big centerpiece guy. Huberdeau's gone, of course. Their defense is going to look different. So they've got a lot of things to do as well. As far as the intensity level, it's always there. I mean, that's a great thing. You can say that, about Montreal Canadiens playing Boston Bruins for the last three generations. It's just there. It's in the air. And I think, because of the playoffs the last few years, it's there. It's in the air. And because two, interstate rivals, that's great. And that's wonderful. It's great for the fans. So is there a little bit of that? Yeah, maybe. But mostly the players are trying to figure out themselves. Yes, get a feel for Florida a little bit. But really, it's getting a feel for themselves. And where am I supposed to be? And oh, I just missed that assignment. And, my passing still isn't up to par. Those are the kinds of things that Stammer and Cooch and Point and Paul and everybody on and on down the line. And your reads, for defensemen, getting your timing down. And there's so much action and so much speed in the game. Am I in the right place? Did I get caught too far outside the dots on that last shift? I got to get back into the middle here.
Brian, Vlad Nemestikov is back. How much of what he is going to bring to the Lightning will help them offset the departure of Palat?
A little different player than Pally for me. He doesn't have as much offense. Like, Pally, you look at his regular season numbers, and they're good. They're solid. They always are. But look what he's done in the playoffs. I mean, it's spectacular, really. And that's where you really have a big miss with Andre Palat. Unfortunately, financially, that's just the way it had to go. I've never seen Nemestikov really at that level. He has not, been put. He's found his level, which is a good, solid two-way player, can make some plays. I don't see him as a great finisher. He's an excellent penalty killer because he can skate. He reads plays and he understands the game really well. So that makes him very versatile. That is a blessing sometimes, and it's also a curse sometimes. Now, the good thing is that the players who've been here for years know Vladdy, and it's great. So he understands. He's comfortable. I'm sure he's feeling fairly comfortable already. So that helps. The Russians all know him, and they were, good buddies. And that's an important factor too, right? They like hanging out with each other. That's another important factor. Vladdy is capable of doing different jobs. And if they keep moving him around and plugging him into different jobs on different lines, that's the part that's the curse part, as far as I'm concerned. You become so versatile that, let's put Vladdy there. I mean, he can do it. Next thing you know, a guy like him, I'm not predicting this is going to happen. I'm saying it can happen because I've seen it before, that he keeps getting plugged into different roles and on different lines. And next thing you know, he's kind of lost his game. And, then they're trying to talk to him of Vladdy, like, what's wrong? We need a little more offense from you. But meanwhile, I mean, the coaches are not stupid. They realize that also, like, we got to settle him down and let him get comfortable as well. So again, that that takes care of itself. They don't know exactly who's going to be playing with whom. And that's why we've seen different line combinations, you know, in these games so far. And it'll become more and more interesting these last two games and then game one and two and three of this road trip to start the season.
Brian Engblom joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Radio. I've got two more questions for you, Brian. I wanted to ask you, let's stay with another Russian, and that would be Mikhail Sergachev. Do you feel like he's got another level to get to in his game? And do you feel like it needs to happen this year because of what we previously talked about with the loss of Ryan McDonough?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's more there that he can refine his game. And yes, they will be relying on him flat out. I mean, he got a new deal. He is one of the reasons. He and Chernak and Cirelli's new deals that got signed were one of the reasons that, unfortunately, you know, McDonough was a guy who had to pay the price in many ways, and they had to move on because of his salary. So Sergachev is going to take more of those responsibilities. He's a lefty. McDonough was a lefty. And in today's game, you don't see much crossover, although Sergachev is one of those guys that can play the right side. Not many guys can anymore on defense. So that shows you right there the confidence level they have in Sergachev, because he has great feet. He's a great skater and he has really good hands, et cetera, et cetera. So he can make that shift from left to right because he can turn just as well each way. So that's a bonus for him. But he's mostly going to be that number two left side guy. And that's because McDonough is gone. Sometimes he was 1A with Hedman. Sometimes he was, you know, third left side guy. So again, that versatility sometimes ended up being a curse for him as far as ice time. So he always sort of had that, you know, that clenching of his fist, like, come on, come on. You know, I want a little more. I want a little more. And he's shown that he's capable of it. Well, he's certainly going to be capable of it. And he will get it more this year, which means he will get more of a steady diet of top-line guys, defending top-line guys all the time, which is what McDonough did. So when you're doing that, you sometimes you're going to go through bad games. You're going to go through bad stretches where, even though he's talented, these top guys are just eating you up, and it seems like you're on the ice for goals against, and that's difficult to deal with. So your focus ends up being more and more defensively, which can take away from your offense, excuse me, momentarily at certain times in your game. I've had conversations with Ryan McDonough over the past couple of years about that. And I flat out said to him, guys, a couple of times over the last 2 years, don't let them do that to you. Don't let them, meaning the coaching staff, don't let them change your brain. You're too good a player. You came in from the Rangers, a power play guy, a guy who made plays, who got up on the play. Here you're mainly that matchup guy and you're killing penalties. Next thing you know, you're not even thinking about stuff that you used to do offensively. Don't let them do that to you. I said that flat out to him. And he said back to me a couple of weeks later, said, I'm really glad you told me that. So Sergachev is going to go through some of that stuff because it's just a part of the evolution of where he is in his game and where the Lightning are necessity-wise in theirs. So he loves to score goals. He makes plays. I think he still has to give that a lot of thought. I still think the old expression, whether it's in golf or whatever, aim small, miss small, I wish he got that in his head a little bit more. He misses too many good shooting opportunities where he doesn't get it through or he misses the net. And that's aggravating when you're shooting it high wide, especially when you've got an absolute gun of a wrist shot. He reminds me of Denny Potvin and Mark Howe going back to a prior generation. I mean, they could just rip the wrist shot from the blue line. Sergei can do that, but he's not nearly as refined as they were when it comes to actual production of using that shot. There's work to be done there, and he's certainly capable of doing it.
Brian, last one from me about another defenseman who is going to be taking a big step forward this year, and that's Cal Foote. If he plays with Hedman, and I'm trying to think back, the game in L.A. when the Lightning only had four defensemen, Foote played with Hedman. But I'm not sure that he played a lot with him outside of that game. What is that adjustment going to look like for Cal if he is, in fact, playing regularly with Hedman? And the adjustment, not only in terms of playing with Hedman, but also more minutes and, let's say, weightier responsibility in terms of the matchup that he's going to be getting.
Yeah, he's going to be one of the most interesting guys to watch. Sergey, for one, and Cal Foote, no doubt about that. He's a right side guy. Root is not there. Bogosian's out of the lineup for, what, a month and a half, maybe 2 months, whatever, because of his returning from injury. And so the right side is kind of up for grabs. Who's going to play with whom? Chemistry is an interesting thing, even more interesting on defense than it is up front on forwards, because like when Kevin Shattenkirk came in, everybody's thinking, well, geez, he could be a great pair with Victor Hedman. Not so much. Did they play together sometimes? Sure. Did they overlap? Yeah. But it wasn't a real good match. Shattenkirk doesn't. He's not the type of player. He's kind of a type A personality, that he's looking to do things that he can do. So was Victor. When you play with Victor, you have to look at not only with the team that's coming at you and what they're doing, you have to look at Victor and get a sense of what's Victor going to do, because Victor Hedman doesn't play by the book all the time, and you don't want him to. You know, guys, I've used this term many times. You don't turn a thoroughbred into a plow horse. He's a thoroughbred. You let him run. You let him do what Victor Hedman can do, because he's different and he's that skilled. Why did Jan Ruda work so well with Hedman? Because he understood that. He could see what Victor was doing, which means sometimes he's coming way across to Jan Ruda's side. That means Ruda's got to fold over and cover up for where Victor just came from, because teams are smart. Victor leaves his spot. Other teams fill in a guy. Now that guy's open. If that back checker on the Lightning wasn't good enough, then Ruda's got to be there. You're the last line of defense. You have to read things. And that's where Jan Ruda got to play with Hedman. Now, he couldn't take the volume that Victor can, and Cal Foote won't be able to take the volume of play that Victor Hedman, but he doesn't have to, because some of it for Victor is power play, right? And right now, Foote's not going to do that. Cal Foote is a very bright player. Like, he understands. You can tell he's his dad's kid. He's been coached well ever since he was a little kid. Adam Foote was a terrific defenseman, knew his position really well. And so Cal understands that. The rest has been, what do I need to do? And we've always talked about his foot speed. He understands that. And I'm sure, I think he's just cringing every time somebody brings it up, right? And I get that. But it's true, and he knows it. It's all about being on the move. He cannot get caught standing still, because he's not going to turn and go, going to have that quick pickup speed that some of the other guys on the Lightning do on defense, which means he has to be on the move. Keep your feet moving all the time. Do not get stopped standing still and having guys coming at you already at full throttle. He's going to be in trouble. So those are the types of things he's better and better and better at. Will he play some with Victor? Yeah, they're giving him a chance right now. Will he play with other guys? Yes, sometimes maybe third pair. I don't know. Again, that depends on what's Myers going to do. What are the other new guys going to do? And sometimes it's not so much, okay, you're not bad. It's just we like that guy better. You know, don't ever forget that coaches are looking and going, those are the guys, then them, then them, then them, then them, all the way up and down. Maybe it's because somebody passed you. And I think that's the feeling I've gotten from Hayden Fleury. About his, he was a number 5 or number 6 pick overall, you know, when he was first drafted. So he's been a pro 5 or 6 years. People keep passing him. So is he ready to have that not happen anymore? Is he ready to pass someone else to be a regular on a team and play? That's another question that has to be answered.
Brian, lastly, and we would have to ask the players, but for somebody who's won and been part of a championship team, the year that, let's say, you're defending your title and you don't win it, the following year, is there somewhat of a weight lifted off your shoulders because you do not have to worry now of the pressures that come with getting everybody's best shot? Not to say the Lightning aren't, but is there something different about being the defending Stanley Cup champs and maybe just one of the better teams in the league? Is there a mental component to this that maybe internally there's some pressure that has been lifted from the Lightning players?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you look at it a little bit differently. That varies from player to player a little bit. But ultimately, you know, there's only one Stanley Cup champ. So it's Colorado right now. And so they have to bear that weight that every single night, whether it's the end of October or the middle of February, the other team is coming after them because, yeah, they won the cup. And it does get a little heavy sometimes. But and this is a sort of a fine point, but it's a mental point for me. If you are defending the cup, I said this, you know, after their Lightning's first cup and after their second, don't defend the cup. And this is only my point of view because I've heard the coaches and I've heard the players saying, yeah, we want to defend it. Okay. If that's how you look at it, great. I don't. And there were a lot of us, I think, on the teams I played on in Montreal. We just say, okay, yeah, we won it. And yes, everybody, obviously we did win it last year, so you can call us that. But we put it back up on the shelf and we're going after it again, just like everybody else. Every other team in the league, let's go back after it again. So that may be a fine point, but we found it to be a pretty healthy way to approach playing and let other people say whatever they want. That defending thing gets a little bit heavy after a while. So having said that, the fact that they got to the finals but did not win, yeah, I think it does change. It does change your focus, but now you truly are that team that the Stanley Cup is back up on that shelf again, and they're going after it with all the other favored teams in the league, and I think that's a great way to do it.
Brian, as always, this was a lot of fun. Love talking hockey with you. We appreciate the expertise, and we'll see you at the rink soon, and we'll do it again down the road here for sure.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it. That is Brian Engblom joining us here on the broadcast. I want to get everybody's thoughts on that interview. Hit us up on Twitter at Bolts Radio before we get into what Brian had to say. I want to let you know, too, the Lightning announced today a number of initiatives aimed at aiding those affected by Hurricane Ian, and they're going to be conducting a supply drive on Ford Thunder Alley beginning today, and that's going to run through Saturday. So an opportunity there to help those who are in need. Also, they're going to be having an auction. Details can be found at floridastrong.givesmart.com. And fans interested in making general donations to help support the Lightning's Hurricane Ian relief efforts, just visit tampabaylightning.com/lightningfoundation with that. I thought we covered a lot there with Brian, Mish. Is there anything that stood out for you when it came to the talk and maybe the issues or positives here for this Lightning team moving forward?
Well, I mean, he understands that the two defensemen, and that's his position, so he's definitely clued into that,
yep,
that he's looking at really carefully this year, at least at the start. I think he's looking at Myers and Cole as well, and will Hayden Fleury be able to take that step forward? But the two guys that he really mentioned the most and talked about in depth the most, Sergachev and Foote. And I think that most people would agree with that they are going to be taking on added responsibility from where they were previously. He talked about Sergachev missing the net. I know that Phil talks about that a lot. Phil loves his wrist shot. I never heard that comparison, and so you're asking me what stood out. That was an interesting comparison that he made, and when he said it, it immediately clicked. I mean, I saw Potvin and Mark Howell play. I can't say that I saw them play a lot. I mean, when I was growing up, we were kind of limited to the regional coverage, and I grew up in the Massachusetts area, so I mean, I was only seeing them in bits and pieces, but I'd seen them enough to know that, yeah, they had a really hard wrist shot. That's a great comparison with what Sergachev can do from the blue line. And maybe wristing it is the way to get it on the net more. We saw him in the playoffs last year score from that spot, or at least it got tipped along the way. I mean, the one against the Rangers, remember, Palat was given credit for the goal because it hit off his leg or whatever in game 5. But that's a threat, and that is a weapon that he can use, but it's not going to be a threat. It's not going to be a weapon if it's not on net. So I thought that was really interesting that he made that point.
It's not. And, you know, he feels like Sergachev has another level to get to, and I think we all agree with that. And, you know, I think it's something the Lightning are counting on, especially with the loss of McDonough and how that's going to all play out. I like the talk about Nemestikov and his skill sets compared to, you know, Palat, and where does a guy like Nemestikov fit in? It almost sounded like, too, guys who are versatile, who can play up and down the lineup, sometimes that hurts them a little bit in their development as a player, isn't it?
Right, like, because you don't have as defined of a role, basically. Yeah. And I think they're going to use Vladdy that way. It's interesting because there was an article, there were several articles out about Nemestikov in the last couple of days. Eric Erlandson had one. I think the Tampa Bay Times had one as well. You know, Jeff Blashill had him in Detroit, and Blashill's now, you know, an assistant coach with the Lightning. And not only Blashill, but also John Cooper mentioned that, you know, Vladdy's defensive awareness, the defensive part of his game, has been the biggest noticeable shift, I think, from the time in between him leaving and coming back.
Right.
And it's been 4 years. I mean, he was in the McDonough trade. So think about how long Ryan McDonough was with the Lightning. That's how long it's been since Nemestikov was with the Lightning. That's not an insignificant amount of time. And he comes back now. He's in his late 20s. With more experience, and that is what has struck them. I mean, penalty kills now. I'm not sure that he really did that a lot with the Lightning the first time around, but he may, in fact, do it this time around.
Sure.
And he's done it with some of the other teams that he's been on over the last several years. I am not as convinced that he can't produce offensively. I mean, he was a first-round pick for a reason, and he is a different player than Palat. I mean, I said that as well. Earlier this week, I agree with Brian, but I don't think that they're necessarily going to get less production from him than what they got from Palat. I mean, if they got the kind of production from Nemestikov in a playoff series that they got from Palat the last couple of years, that would be incredible. But if we're just talking about kind of the regular season numbers, I think Vladdy can be a point producer, whether he's playing on a line with Stamkos or Kucherov or somewhere else.
You know, it's there for sure, and he's got the pedigree. Not that that always means you're going to be a player that produces to that level, but, you know, first-round pick and, you know, that Russian dynamic as well, that always is a little bit of a factor too. And I think coming back to a place that he performed and did at a pretty high level, I think is going to help the Lightning, again, overcome some of the losses they've had to endure here the last couple of years with some grittier players who have had to move on. I think Nemestikov can fit that role pretty well. So it's going to be interesting. We're going to find out a little bit more about this team tomorrow night as the Lightning will take on the Panthers. You can listen to all of that coverage right here on Lightning Radio on the TuneIn app. So make sure you do that as well. We'll have a pregame for you. And, of course, Dave will have the play-by-play call with Chief, and we'll do a little post-game too. And then, of course, beforehand, 12-1, we will be talking Lightning hockey and taking your questions as well. Partner, great job as always. We appreciate Brian Engblom as well. We're going to do it again tomorrow.
All right. Talk to you tomorrow, Greg.
Thanks to Steve Versnick as well. Thanks to you for listening. Again, keep those questions coming in at Bolts Radio. We didn't get to any today, but we can do that again tomorrow. And you're listening to Power Lunch right here on Lightning Radio.